Administrative.
Revamping of the statutes.
We received
That's okay.
A request from Apple.
Okay, good morning. I'll call to order the meeting of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement for March 5, 2010. At the moment, we have an administrative quorum. We do not yet have a full quorum on the Senate side. But since we have an administrative quorum, we can adopt the minutes of the February 26, 2010 meeting. Is there a motion to adopt the minutes of the meeting?
Mr. Chair, I move that the minutes be adopted as printed.
Representative Murphy moves the adoption of the minutes. Is there discussion of the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendments, minutes are adopted. I've gotten a number of requests for testimony for today on the MSRS, PERA, TRA bills. We took 3.5 hours worth of testimony last Friday. It's not my intention to reopen the testimony all over again and start going from there. Now, if members have issues that they want to clarify, if they want to try to, if we need some further information on it, we'll certainly request it. But I'm going to pick up for where we left off last Friday when we finished the testimony, and the members want a little bit of time to think about the proposals before us. And so there's not going to be an assumption that we're going to be testifying on this particular package again. We're looking at we rolled all three documents, MSRS, PERA, and TRA, into one document. For our convenience purposes. We had left hanging out there an issue of Senate File 2672 as a possible adoption and an alternative. And it's my understanding that there's been, at least the funds have some sort of understanding or agreement as to how to handle that. And I think this is mainly a PERA issue. Ms. Vanek, are you here? Why don't you come forward and tell us what the status is on 2672.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mary Vanek, the Director of Public Employees Retirement Association. Senate File 2672 was a bill that was requested by the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters with respect to our Police and Fire Fund. And essentially, it mapped the board's proposal, except that it requested that police and fire members be allowed to have an annual retirement adjustment equal to inflation up to 1.5% until the fund was initially 85% funded, and then they agreed to go to 90. I spoke to them in the meantime, and we have come to some agreement that rather than 0% augmentation that you accepted as an amendment to our major bill last week, we would like to return the augmentation feature to 1% for all current deferred members through the beginning January 1st, 2011. And then those who terminate service, whether it's in our general plan, our police and fire plan, or our correctional plan, would get no augmentation if they terminate public employment after December 31st of this year. So on the augmentation piece, that was the compromise we agreed to. The police and fire members preferred to have no augmentation for everybody going forward. They've agreed to accept the 1% for current deferred members. With respect to the cost of living or the annual retirement adjustment, they agreed to accept that we would pay them 1% each of the next 2 years, January 1st, 2011 and 2012, and thereafter their feature would move back to the inflation up to 1.5% until 90% funded. So those provisions would need to be added to recap, the contribution rate increase that's in the big bill is the same, so that's acceptable. The vesting change to graded vesting from 5 years at half vesting to full vesting at 10 years is in the big bill. That's acceptable to them. We need to have the augmentation feature changed in the big bill to go back to 1% beginning January 1st, 2011, and no augmentation for future terminated members. And we need to modify the cost of living adjustment for police and fire members to align with our 1%, but only for the next 2 years, and then inflation up to 1.5% thereafter.
Okay. And we have a 3M amendment. Mr. Martin, does this pretty much capture that understanding or that agreement?
Yes, members. If you look at the 3A amendment, the change related to the deferred annuities augmentation, making it applicable to at a 1% rate for individuals who terminate employment before January 1, 2011, and setting it at zero for individuals who terminate public employment after December 31st, 2012. That's the first third of the first page, down to about line 1.12. The change in the post-our retirement adjustments for PERA, police, and fire is the balance of the amendment. On lines 1.26 through 1.31, this is the holding the 1% increases for 2011 and 2012, and then starting at 1.32 is the CPI-based increase up to 1.5% after 2012.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of 3A.
Well, I'm still a little thin on the Senate side. I'm going to see if I can find one more senator. Box office. It wasn't down here. As soon as I can get another senator in here, we'll do that. Any other questions on the 3A amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can't find it in the principles, but I did have a question about when we have in the plan for a long time a augmentation on the annuity. I think there are people who make their retirement plans around that expectation that they're going to have that augmentation. So I am a little concerned because I have heard from some people about changing that now, and I don't think it makes a big difference on the bottom line in terms of saving money. We do that. So I guess I just wanted to express my concern that, you know, it's different. I think it's different than the COLA, which we think the COLA does change based on it should change, I think. Personally, I don't think it should be a set COLA. I think it should be based more on the CPI because it is supposed to be for cost of living. But I do have some concerns about, in this plan, and I think in MSRS, the changes we're making in the annuity augmentation. Hope I said that right.
Okay. Ms. Vanek, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, certainly the board had that discussion. But if you think about it, somebody who left the system years ago is receiving an increase in their base benefit that is far greater than someone who retires at age 55 with the same years of service and the same salary and begins collecting their benefit immediately. The benefit value of the one account we looked at, if the person would have retired at age 55 after just completing up to about 9 years of service, would have been about $964 a month. Yeah. With the augmentation feature, given the age that the person left the system, the benefit at age 55 is going to be $1,940 a month. So our augmentation feature is incredibly generous. I think more from a policy perspective, the board thought, why are we giving an interest feature on the growth of a benefit to somebody who has left the system that is so different than or and so much more generous than someone who retires at retirement age, same years of service, same salary, and gets a much lesser, even with our 2.5% annual adjustments, our retirees would be getting less than somebody who left the system years ago.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Pappas.
Well, how much was that augmentation? I mean, is it similar? I just heard from someone in MSRS, so I don't know what yours is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we pay 3% on the benefit from the time the person left public employment until they begin to collect their benefit up to age 55. And if they choose to leave the benefit there longer, they start to receive 5% augmentation, like a 5% annual raise on that benefit value. So it is, from a policy perspective, I think it really needs to be looked at more broadly. But this was the board's attempt to align that policy for our deferreds to match our retirees, and that it's their contribution to the overall fix in the system.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Babbitt.
But the reality is, this is what people had counted on when they retired, that they'd be receiving this benefit. So we really are taking, maybe it wasn't good policy to begin with, but we are taking that benefit away from them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we're modifying what they can expect to receive when they get to retirement age. But I think you could, there are a lot of things that are happening within these bills that have changed the outlook of our pension systems, but the change is necessary because of the financial stability of these plans.
Let the record reflect that we have a full quorum. Senator Rosen, we have a 3A amendment before us that Representative Murphy has moved. As you remember from last week, we had kind of hanging out this issue that whether we should have a modification of the cost of living and some of the other issues on PERA, and there was basically an agreement to accept what was, I guess, part basically Senate File 2672 as part of that. So, and apparently that's the funds are okay with it, and you know,
okay.
Is there anybody opposed to doing this that wants to be heard? Okay, so Representative Murphy renews her motion to adopt the 3A amendment. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, the motion prevails, the amendment's adopted. Okay. I believe there's some technical amendments that need to be made to the overall package, MSRS, PERA, TRA. As typical, we find little things that need to be cleaned up. And there's an amendment being handed out.
Give me your amendment. Members, the 4A amendment is a request from the state retirement system. This relates to the unclassified plan amendments, specifically a provision that deals with unclassified program participants who then serve subsequently in the classified service and their ability to continue in MSRS unclassified plan coverage. Mr. Bergstrom, in reading the provision, felt uncomfortable with the way it ultimately worked out, thought it would be better to stay with current law, and the suggestion here is to delete that section. So this is a fairly limited number of individuals who are in the unclassified plan, then go into the classified state service at some subsequent point. And what is their subsequent pension coverage? Are they in the regular plan or are they in the unclassified plan? The way that the current language changes, it was uncomfortable for Mr. Bergstrom. He wants to continue with the current language.
And Mr. Bergstrom, that's acceptable? Is that okay? So you're okay with this amendment? Okay, he says yes. Is there discussion, questions? Anybody move the amendment?
Sorry, the inability to remember these things from one week to the other. Why was the change proposed?
Members, maybe Mr. Bergstrom can be better to answer that one. Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, good morning. My name is Dave Bergstrom, the director of the state retirement system. If you remember, the original bill that we had for the unclassified plan changed the default from the unclassified plan to the general plan. So the initial bill did that. And this language is just a carryover from that initial bill that needs to be removed. So we, you know, the Pension Commission talked about this at great length. Decided that it would be better to put people in the unclassified plan and give them 7 years to switch to the general plan. The language in the bill is just a carryover from the old bill that we first introduced.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of 4A.
Representative Murphy moves the 4A amendment. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails.
bit soon.
Do we have anything else that we need to address on the bill?
No.
No.
This is on 039.
This is...
we don't have anything.
We'll delete every amendment S-2573-1A. This is number...
Okay.
Number two in your packets, which is kind of a... It's the merging of the three bills.
Yes.
Okay. Do members need any further information on this? I've talked to Representative Murphy about it. It may be appropriate to, you know, we still have to look at St. Paul Teachers in Duluth, which probably would be rolled into something here as well, too. So, well, those are next on the agenda.
So this is rolled in.
So what we may be doing is sending out one pension bill that has all the work we've been doing since last June. We may send out we've already sent out MRF as a separate bill. Possibly we might send out a package of MSRS, TRA, PERA, Duluth, and St. Paul, you know, as a separate bill unto itself. We can still merge the language into the basic bill. I think one of the concerns that I've got is I don't want to have some glitch with you know, these stability bills, you know, jeopardizing all the work we did. I mean, we could wind up with having everything go down. I'd like to at least pass the work that we did all through the summer and fall and everything, if nothing else. And I hope to pass everything or as much as we can. But so if there's nothing further, what I'll – okay, Robert Thiessen, yeah.
Thank you. So this is on the combined TRA.
This is combined TRA, PERA, MSRS, everything in one package right now before us. Representative Thiessen.
It's tab number two.
Tab number two. We rolled all three into one last week just for our convenience.
Right.
And
did we do anything around Mr. Martin? Did you get a chance to you sent me that amendment yesterday. Do we have anything available?
Representative, I never heard back from anyone whether that amendment was going to be offered. So
okay.
No.
All right.
What I'll plan to do is just kind of set it aside so we can talk about St. Paul and Duluth and then circle back and then maybe roll them together. So if there's still something you want to talk about, the major funds, you'll have an opportunity
okay.
to do so.
That's what I need to
But
do.
Before we move on, Senator Rosen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, could somebody, did we ever cover the cost of this quarter percent increase for the employees?
The cost.
How much it's going to cost the local units of government?
The cost of local units of government.
Do we have a...
I guess that'd be mainly the PERA bill, right? Because that's local units of government. I don't remember that. Ms. Vanek, did you? And I don't remember if we've got the memo from before telling us what the. Ms. Vanek, I don't know if you heard the question. From the PERA standpoint, do we know what the costs would be to local government? It's for the employer contribution. If this were to go through, what overall would they be looking at?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, the cost totally across all employers for a quarter percent of pay in our general plan is $12.5 million a year.
That's all cities, all counties, everybody under that jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? As I say, I'll set the package aside for a bit. If there's no further questions or desire for information, then okay. Then let's move on to number four on the agenda, and that's Senate File 2404, the St. Paul Teachers increasing. Well, I don't know if it's what it's going to look like, but it's St. Paul Teachers. Let's see who's got this item. This is Mr. Burke. Yes,
Mr. Chairman, members. What you have in your packet as under the tab number four is the original Senate File 2404, as amended by author's amendment S-2404-11A. That amendment was requested by St. Paul Teachers and Senator Pappas early in the week. So we assume that that amendment would be adopted.
Okay.
And then we...
Well, this is basically an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author desires to proceed with it, it sounds like, right?
Yes.
Senator Pappas? Senator Pappas, you're moving this an author's amendment basically to put the bill in the shape that you desire to proceed.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the number on that? Is it E?
It's the dash 11A.
Dash the 11A amendment. Okay. Okay. Senator Pappas moves the 11A amendment, which is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape she desires to proceed. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion fails. The 11A amendment is adopted. Okay, now we have the bill before us as amended.
Right.
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, the bill with the 11A amendment included in it is contained in the final document in that packet. It's labeled Draft Engrossment, Senate File 2404-E1. And what that draft engrossment does is described in the memo and also on the an executive summary here. First thing it does is it increases the St. Paul teachers' retirement benefits to be similar to or virtually identical to the increase that was provided to TRA back in 2006. So that would increase the accrual rates on any benefit that is computed using step rates, which is rule of 90 benefit or various early retirement benefits, from 1.2% per year of service for each of the first 10 years to 1.4%, and from 1.7% for each year thereafter to 1.9%. These benefit changes are prospective, similar to what was done with TRA back in 2006. Those increases were for prospective service only.
Mr. Chairman, is it okay if I interrupt a little bit?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Just to comment that we know that this is a difficult time for benefit increases, but we just want to make the case so that the commission is reminded that this fund is paying more than normal cost and getting less benefits than comparable teachers.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the next thing that the draft engrossment does is it increases the employee and employer contribution rate by 0.5% of pay each, starting in 2011. It also increases direct state aid to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association by an additional $5.2 million annually, bringing that amount up from $2.8 to $8 million. And it also includes a request to increase the school aid to the St. Paul School District by approximately $1.3 million. That
Mr.
is intended
Chairman,
to...
Oh, Sam Pappas.
Interrupt again.
Go ahead.
I guess I just wanted to comment that I also recognize that these are very difficult difficult fiscal times, but what this proposal is this is what we should be doing. This is like what needs to be done to really fix the fund. And with the school district, I would hope, like other requests for dollars from the school districts, that we might be considering asking the tax committee for a levy authority.
Okay. As long as we're on this topic, first of all, how critical is this component to the bill for right now for this year? Because, I mean, I'm having a tough sell just trying to get something MRF done, and MRF is going to go broke in 5 years. So asking for more state aid, I think you know the answer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to make the case that this is what should be done with this fund. Obviously, what realistically can be done, we'll be talking about.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Mr. Burke.
Members, the policy issues are outlined there. First is whether the benefit improvement can be justified given labor force needs, the need to attract and retain capable teachers. The second point is whether a benefit improvement in the defined benefit plan can be justified given the extensive authority that already exists in state and federal law to allow teachers to save through tax-deferred vehicles. they can invest in 403Bs up to about $16,000 per year. They can invest in a deferred comp plan up to an additional $16,000 per year. And then they also have authority under the supplemental fund provisions in our statute where an employer can decide to contribute an amount to a supplemental plan for the individual. So there's the possibility of an additional employer match there. And then they have the provisions that most citizens would have, which would be the various IRAs that they could use. The next issue is the difficulty of funding this proposal, coming up with the state aid, given the state budget situation and the budget constraints of the school district. The next point is simply the option of consolidating this fund into TRA. It's very clear that this proposal is an effort, a statement that St. Paul teachers feel they should be treated the same as all the teachers who are covered by TRA. The most cost-effective way of doing that would be to merge this fund into TRA. That would give them the benefit, and it would be cheaper than trying to maintain a separate organization, pumping additional aids into a separate organization and maintaining a separate bureaucracy over there. The next item is the cost of the proposal, and the cost work is detailed in the memo. The next issue then is the long-term cost of using rolling amortization periods. A year or two ago, the commission and the legislature approved the change for this fund, moving to rolling amortization. The problem with rolling amortization is that you never pay off the unfunded. So the extent that this pension fund has unfunded and has unfunded, and we're trying to provide a further benefit increase, which will add to the liabilities of this pension fund. You have a problem with this amortization period in that the contribution requirements that are stated in the actuarial work are always going to be less than they would be if the amortization period was not rolling. As a result of that, in the long term, it is going to take more dollars to fund the benefits of this plan simply because you're never paying off the unfunded. It's very similar to a house mortgage. Now, if you have a house mortgage with a 25-year mortgage and you make the payments every month, every year for 25 years, it's paid off. Well, what you're doing essentially, what's comparable to what's being done with this pension fund is every year you take this 25-year mortgage and you say, well, we've got an additional 25 years to pay it off. And because you always have an additional 25 years to pay it off, you may be paying a little bit less each year, but you never retire the debt. So what was done a year or two ago adds to the cost of this particular request, trying to provide this benefit improvement to the fund. The last point that I make is that there's an inconsistency between the drafting for one of the aid provisions that is in the bill and the use of this rolling amortization. There's a provision in the draft, and it's in the E1 draft. It would be Section 5, appearing on page 4. This aid provision deals with the termination of supplemental contributions and direct matching state aid. Basically, what this section does in current law is any of the any aids that are redirected to St. Paul teachers under current law would terminate when the St. Paul teachers had the same funding ratio as TRA. Now that is being changed, and under the new language, starting on line 20 on page 4, It says that these redirected aids would continue to go to St. Paul Teachers until the St. Paul Teachers is fully funded. Well, if all the assumptions are met, this pension fund will never be fully funded. So this drafting is somewhat misleading. It might be more straightforward to simply say that these aids are going to be continued indefinitely. Because, again, if the assumptions are met, the fund will never be fully funded, and therefore it will never, this aid will never shut off. I have several amendments suggested here. I believe the author also has some amendments that she would like to
offer. Sarah Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, before we continue, the 21A amendment is also an author's amendment.
Okay.
And I believe I didn't understand that I was supposed to.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's not in your packets. We have to pass that out.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say something in support of the rolling amortization, which is one of the things that I strongly support for open funds, particularly in times of tough financial things where we don't, which is as long as you have an open fund and you have contributions being made and a long period for investments to come off, it doesn't make sense to put higher requirements for funding of pensions when you don't need to use that money in the next few years. At some point, and I think we've seen the problems of fully funded pension plans. When we got fully funded pension plans, there were large calls for extra benefits, which then turned out to be inappropriate at the time. But you did it because the plan was fully funded, and you argued the funding ratio was never going to go down. A rolling amortization is completely inappropriate for anything that has a close, for any kind of a closed plan. But to put extra money into pensions to keep an artificial amount of money available because you have an amortization where you know the St. Paul system is going to go beyond whatever the number is, 20 years, 30 years, and so forth. And if it's not going to go beyond that, then if we have indications that the St. Paul system is going to close down before that period of time, then you can deal with the fact that you're going to be looking at something that's a closed fund. But I just want to oppose the objection to the rolling amortization. I think it's better than coming back every few years and changing it to another 20, 30, or so forth.
Sarah Pappas, you had the 21A amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is also an author's amendment.
What does it do? Mr. Burke?
Mr. Chairman, what the 21A amendment does, it retains the benefit improvements that are in the E1 draft, but it moves the employee and employer contribution increase, and that was a 0.5% of pay, from 2011, as in the E1, to 2010. So it moves that up a year. The benefit increase is also moved up a year. In the E1 draft, that was to start in 2011. Under this amendment, that would start in 2010 instead. And there are two new provisions that are added. The first one, and that starts on in the 21A amendment on page 1, line 7. It does away with a requirement that any reallocated amortization or supplemental amortization aid be segregated into a separate account, and that none of the money in that account can be used to finance any benefit increases. That's the stricken language on the back of the page. My understanding is that's desired because of a concern about an audit finding the state auditor. I think Mr. explained that. And the final thing that it does is it requires a study, and that's on the back of the page 2 of the 21A amendment, starting on line 22. It would require a study where the state auditor would essentially gather all interested parties, study the investment authority of large plans and small plans, and come up with some proposals in a report to the legislature to make needed revisions in investment authority and fiduciary provisions.
Just on that last part, and Senator Pappas, maybe you want to make an incorporation here. It says that this report will be sent to the chair of the Senate State and Local Government Operations Oversight Committee and the chair of the House State and Local Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. We've had a policy, at least in the Senate GovOps Committee, that to say that if the report's coming out, it should go both to the chair and to the ranking minority member. So I would suggest in incorporation, if Senator Pappas is amenable, on page 2, line 32, after the word chair and the ranking minority member, and the same change in 2.33. Senator Pappas is on the same committee that I'm on, so she's aware of the issue. So, yeah. Senator Pappas or Mr. Kepler, did you want to comment on the 21A amendment?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. The effects of the amendment are, as Mr. Burek described, the reallocation of amortization aid language is a housekeeping piece, and didn't really want to bring this up sort of at the last minute, but it came up in last-minute discussions as the State Auditor's Office is finalizing work on our audit for the fiscal year ended June 30 of 2009. And legal counsel for the auditor's office advised us that there is still this language out there that redirected amortization aid money coming to the fund be put in a separate account. When that was drafted, the fund was operating a 13th check as their post-retirement adjustment, and so it was an asset-based adjustment for the retirees. We have since migrated from that to the guaranteed 2% plus investment earnings, and now we're on a strict CPI-based COLA under the pilot project, and it doesn't really have relevance anymore. So the auditor's office was willing to buy the explanation that the assets didn't have to be segregated, but they said the language is still out there saying that we would create the account. So that's what that language is about, is to get rid of what's really outdated language.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves the 21A amendment. Is there a discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, Senator Pappas and Mr. Kepler, could you discuss in greater detail the proposal you have before us? Mr. Kepler.
Mr. Chairman and members, you know, the fund board and our Senate author and House author, Representative Aaron Murphy, understand that these are not auspicious times, probably, for asking for a benefit equity proposal that includes a formula improvement for members. It has a cost, and the cost is being proposed to be funded for the school district in the same manner that this formula increase was done in 2006 for TRA members. In terms of benefit equity, The purpose of the uniformity bill back in 1997 wasn't to put everybody on the exact same benefit set with all features being the same, but the idea was to get people in similar lines of public service receiving the same basic core benefit, and the core benefit is defined by the formula we have in St. Paul. Teachers whose benefit is inferior to and are accruing a retirement benefit at an inferior rate to teachers in neighboring districts, and that's the core benefit set. They are a different employment group, different employer, and they have different circumstances, exigencies from an administrative standpoint, student population, age of workforce, lots of different things. And so there is rationale for having different features in the benefit programs for these plans, but to have the value of a year of teaching service valued for retirement differently for teachers in St. Paul and neighboring school districts doesn't make any sense. And so the board is bringing that proposal at this time. It probably would have been better to do this in 2006 at the same time it was done for TRA, but that's water under the bridge at this point. The funding deficiency is 2.76%. That's big in our view, and it's something that needs to be resolved. is it an inauspicious time for the fund to be asking for, the board knows this, for the fund to be asking for a $5 million increase in aid, most certainly, but we've been asking for the better part of 20 years for these holes to be filled, holes that the board maintains are really, in large measure, owing to mistakes that we've made in the past in setting the contribution rates for this fund. And those rates are set here in the last 55 years of this fund's existence. An adequate contribution, according to the actuaries, has only come into the fund in two of those 55 years. You know, the fact that St. Paul has a significant unfunded liability really isn't news. The real news, I think, the mystifying thing to me in some respects is that this fund is still here and still not in a funded status that is markedly deteriorated relative to funds who have had a better and adequate contribution for substantial periods when St. Paul did not. So we know it's an inauspicious time, but it appears the last 20 years when we've been petitioning for increased contributions to eliminate those unfunded liabilities, we're inauspicious too. So in the interest of continuity, we're here again asking for assistance in resolving that unfunded liability problem. You know, to the question of whether St. Paul should be consolidated with the statewide TRA, none of our members are asking for that. The board certainly isn't. I don't know whose benefit that would be to. Right now, the St. Paul Teachers Fund has a big unfunded liability from our vantage and a large contribution deficiency of 2.76%. But that deficiency is about half what you're looking at in the statewide teachers fund right now. Their funded ratio is higher, but all else remaining the same, those funded ratios are converging. You're not going to get any benefits by merging St. Paul. We have the best investment performance of any public fund on a 10-year basis and a 5-year basis, I believe, according to the state auditor's most recent report. We have the lowest administrative cost of any public plan based on that same report. The efficiencies seem to be where in the administration of this fund seem to be operating quite well, I think. And I don't see that there's any advantage to consolidation. It's not really, I think that's a much broader issue than you want to take on at this point in time. The purpose of the bill is to get benefit equity for members, but first to fill the funding hole. First priority is to get adequate contributions coming into the fund. We're seeking the same objective that the statewide plans are. You know, were our problems created by the investment market to the same degree as they appear to be driven for the statewide plans? I don't think so, but our problems have definitely been exacerbated by the same forces. And we're here asking for the state to pick up the lion's share of the increased contributions here because, quite frankly, the employer and employee are doing their share. The state funds are coming in and asking their members and employer groups to share pain in resolving their funding problem. Our employer and our members have been sharing the pain for solving our funding problem for quite some time. The employer is making a contribution 4.5% in excess of 50% of normal cost. The employees, and you know, by this commission's own policies and guidelines, are making a contribution 1.2% in excess of normal cost. That isn't supposed to happen. The state's contribution to the fund at 2.8%, at $2.8 million with the amortization aid, gets us up to closer to 3.4%. That's still only 1.6%. of the payroll base equivalent for this fund. So the state's putting in 1.6, which is not much more than the amortization payment being made by the members who shouldn't be making any. That's the basis for that request. I'm not here to scold, but trying to delineate as clearly as I possibly can the rationale for bringing the proposal forward as it has come. And lastly, we think that the investment-related statutes that we operate under are really getting cumbersome, kind of tangled. They're kind of a one-size-fits-all. I think that the study group over the interim is a very good idea. The auditor's office has offered to convene and to support that work group study efforts. and we're thankful for that. I just think that there's a lot of work there that needs to be done to differentiate between the very small plans and medium and larger size plans. To the question of the effects of the formula improvement relative to the rolling or fixed period amortization target that St. Paul has, I think the fixed amortization target period as opposed to the target date makes more sense for an open plan. The actuaries, both the one actuary who was doing all plans a few years ago and our actuary have testified to you that they think it makes sense, and this commission agreed back in 2007 session. And to Mr. Burek's comments about the effects that has on resolving the unfunded liabilities, from a strict theoretical standpoint, I don't disagree with him. All else remaining the same, and if all the assumptions that we have driving these valuations are true and experience proves to match them, it is true. Under a rolling 25-year amortization window, from a theoretical standpoint, you never eliminate the interest on the unfunded liability as an obligation. But from a practical standpoint, we would maintain that the interest on the unfunded liability over that period of time, as you start to approach a 20 or 25-year period of operating under that, is washed out by other factors where we know there's going to be variance from the assumptions, like investment returns, like salary growth, payroll growth, and mortality assumptions. Those things are much bigger drivers and are going to drive the funded ratio from the plan above and below what the model would specify. We think that it's putting too much faith in what we really – it's the best model we've got, but we know it's still an imprecise model. And the assumptions, we know one thing about most of them. They are not going to come to pass. So they're just guidelines, and they're just intended to put us on a responsible funding course. Other than that, from the fund's perspective, we appreciate your consideration of this initiative. We appreciate Senator Pappas' work and advice at every stage of this process. We think it's a good bill, and we think it gets done a lot of good work to the funding issue. We know that there's a lot of competing demands here for resources in a year when you don't really have the money, but we think that this ought to be among your higher priorities for both the short and long term.
And it's completely unrealistic. Mr. Kapler, in 2008 we had a $1 billion budget deficit, and at that time the agencies, everybody was saying, the Senate proposed to have a 3% cut. The agencies said they couldn't possibly do it. Spend down the reserves, so we spent down the reserves. We balanced the budget. Last year we had a $6.4 billion deficit after this federal stimulus money came in. That helped. I mean, we had a $4.8 billion. But we still had a 5% cut to everybody except K-12 and some other areas. K-12 got no increase. We got the budget forecast this past week. It's been modified. So instead of a $1.2 billion deficit, it's slightly less than $1 billion for the current biennium. The balanced budget that we had last spring is unbalanced to the tune of nearly $1 billion. And then the next biennium coming up, $5 billion in excess of a deficit's coming up. I mean, we're not competing for resources. We're competing to avoid deeper and deeper cuts, and that's all we've had to do. I cannot go forward with a proposal to say, well, let's just spend $5 million more permanent aid to continue for the St. Paul School District, unless there's a proposal while it's going to be paid for. Who are you proposing to cut? Because there's no money. Who do you propose to cut to pay for this? Do you want to pull out some other school district? How do you propose to do this, Mr. Kapler?
Mr. Chairman, members, if I may, just to that question, because you've addressed it directly to me. With all due respect, this is not a finance committee. This is a policy committee. I think
Mr.
the question
Kapler,
is,
I have to carry a bill, and I can't support something like this.
That's understood, but I thought we were here to deliberate the policy issues at hand. There is an unfunded liability in this plan. There is a contribution deficiency, and the normal costs plus amortization costs are being met by the employer and employees already. The state has not ever done its equitable share in resolving the unfunded liabilities of this plan, and this board has brought this proposal again asking that hole be filled. As a matter of public pension policy, I think the proposal has its merits, and where the money is found, if you want me to go away and do homework on that, I'm happy to do it. I did work in the budget office for 8 years, and at the auditor's office for an additional 3. I do know something about where the resources get spent, but I don't know that that's a fair charge to assign us.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think what St. Paul teachers would like from the Pension Commission is just recognition that this is a serious problem that needs to be addressed. And I know we are short of time, and we are certainly aware of that we are short of money. So I would like to propose the 22A amendment, which is our Plan B proposal.
Chairman, you need to hand that out.
Mr. Burke, what does the amendment do?
Mr. Chairman, this amendment amends that draft in Grossman again, the E1 draft. And what amendment dash 22A would do is it would remove all the new aid provisions. That would be the requested increase in direct state aid and the increase in school aid. Those are removed. The amendment would also increase the basic program contribution rate by 1% in 2 steps beginning in 2010. And starting in 2010, it would increase the coordinated member employee contribution rates in 2 steps by 1%. The amendment would also increase the employer contributions by 2% in 4 steps over 4 years. And that would be for the basic and coordinated members. The amendment also removes the benefit increase, turning this into an effort to simply stabilize the fund. And the amendment also includes those same provisions that were in the dash 2021 amendment, which is the elimination of that language that would require a separate account to hold any amortization, supplemental amortization aid that was redirected. And on page 3 of the 22A amendment is that same provision requiring a study group to be convened by the state auditor to look at investment authority and fiduciary issues.
And can we incorporate that language for the ranking minority member after the word chair on page 318 and 319? Go to the chair and to the ranking minority member. Thank you. So this simply has the contribution increase, and that's it. No state aid increase, no state, no increase in school aid, no benefit improvement. Is that
correct? The increase in employee and employer contributions in the 22A amendment are larger than in the earlier amendment.
Gotcha. Senator Pappas?
Mr.
Kapler.
Mr. Chairman, this is, Pappas anticipated some of the concerns that you would raise and others about finding money for taking care of the formula increase, filling the funding hole strictly with state appropriations. So this is an amendment that keeps the investment authority's study, does the housekeeping legislation on the redirected amortization aid, but in effect, I think you may have to rescind the amendment that you just did, the housekeeping amendments that the author offered, but this would supplement or substitute contribution increase being borne by the employee and the employer strictly to address the funding deficiency issue at this time. And that would take the employer up in 0.5% increments over 4 years to 2% contribution increase and the employee up 1% rather than the full 2%, that would get us to additional contributions at the end of this phase-in of 3%, which is in excess of the current deficiency at 2.76% at this point in time. So it would resolve the problem. And there's no need to take the employee up the additional percent because it would create a sufficiency in contributions. So we stopped at 1%.
Okay. Why don't we back up a step and pull out the 21A amendment we've already adopted, so that's out of the picture. And we only have the 22A amendment. So Senator Pappas moves to reconsider the 21A amendment.
Reconsider 21A.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. 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 Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, and then Senator Pappas
withdraws 21A
and offers 22A. Okay. Okay. Any further questions or discussion? So 22A only has the contribution increase for St. Paul teachers. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, have you had conversations with the St. Paul School District with regard to this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynch, it definitely is a hardship for the St. Paul School District, and I think, like with TRA, we need to seek levy authority to cover this additional expense.
And that levy authority is not part of this amendment right now, is that?
No.
It is not.
Okay. So do you anticipate at some point along the way to seek levy authority? I go with the policy committees from here. And then
I'll work with the school districts to see what the plan is.
My thought for, a route would be that if you're seeking levy authority, would have to go to the tax committees in each body. I think that the tax committee would be a stop for the finance committees and ways and means, to look at that. Because if the tax committees aren't very receptive to the levy authority, that it may or may not affect what you can do in the finance committees. You don't want to have the finance committees approve the bill with the assumption that levy authority is okay, and then realize that tax committees don't want it. So if you're going to do anything at all, I would suggest you and your house. As a representative, Aaron Murphy would have to probably coordinate something in the policy committee. You're on the policy committee of the Senate. I don't know if she's on in the House. So.
Mr. Chairman, you're carrying the package. Have you had any conversations about levy authority with the tax chair?
No. There's nothing in the bill so far on levy authority. So, Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, on that note, I had a conversation with the Senate tax chair this week about this very issue.
Okay.
And I have also been in conversations with Minnesota School Board Association on this issue. And so would be happy to work with you on that legislation. I would just go further to say that this may be a difficult issue in the tax committee.
And I did meet with the governor's office yesterday, representative, and just they wanted to just get an idea of what pension issues are out there and so forth. And I did happen to mention the fact that, we may be looking at some aspect of levy authority. I mean, that's been an idea that's been bandied around, though, and we have nothing formal before us. And the governor's office said, that would be a problem. So.
And we care.
Why? So there you go. Okay, anything else? Okay, we've got the 22A amendment before us.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
on that last note, I did sign on to a bill that I believe it was School Boards Association had it yesterday. So there's a vehicle around.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, with the shape this is in now, is it your intention to roll this into the big policy bill?
Well, if we adopt the 22A amendment, then you've basically got, if that finishes the work on 2404, yes, I would, I think the motion would be in order to roll this into both, well, I think we can put it in both policy bill, but also in the separate package of MSRS, PERA, TRA, because I anticipate that going as a separate group. I don't know what's going to happen down the road, but I want all the long-term stability components in one place. It's possible that the whole thing may be jeopardized, and we may have to strip everything out of the underlying bill. I don't want to have to get to the end of the road and have nothing pass. I mean, at least I want to pass all the work that we've done since last June, you know, and so I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket if I can avoid that, you know. So is there anything else in the 22A amendment? Senator Pappas moves the 22A amendment. This is only the contribution increase for St. Paul teachers, not the aid increase, not the benefit increase.
And the retirement and the investment study.
I mean,
And the investment study.
Yes, the investment study is part of this, too. Discussion of the motion. Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Pappas moves, then, that Senate File 2404, as amended, be incorporated into the omnibus pension bill. That's the big bill that we've been working on since June. So discussion on that motion. Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Minister Pappas also moves that Senate File 2404, as amended, be incorporated into the S-2573-1A delete all amendment. That's the MSRS PERA TRA amendment. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, so thank you, Senator Pappas. Mr. Kepler? Senator Murphy, do you want to stay there or go to the end?
I would like to stay here, but Mr. Stoffel is here to present.
Okay. This is the Duluth Teachers issue, LCPR 10038, number 5 in your packet.
And we have an amendment also, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Burke, is yours? Yeah, Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, members, I assume that Representative Murphy was referring to the author's amendment, LCPR 10-038-5A. I believe that's needed to put it into the edition that the author requires.
Which is it?
The 5A amendment.
Oh, I see. And then that we've already got an engrossment.
Yes.
With the assumption that happened. So Representative Murphy moves the 5A amendment as an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that she desires to present the bill. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stoffel is here to go over our proposal.
Okay, Mr. Stoffel. The amended proposal.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jay Stoffel. I'm the Executive Director of Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund. I do have a handout in case it might help the Commission with the discussions. And just to clarify, well, what the handout will show is our acknowledgement of, as the other funds have testified, the times that we're in. If the 5A amendment is the amendment to take out the benefit improvements, we understand that, and we're supporting that idea today.
Why don't you describe what's the bill that we have before us? You've described something that's not there. Why don't you describe what is before us?
What's left in the bill after we take out the benefit improvements is described in section number 1 of the handout that's going around. We're changing our cost of living adjustment from what we have today of 2%, a guaranteed increase to the retirees, plus a share of excess investment earnings when we have greater than an 8.5% return on a 5-year average. That cost of living adjustment has been criticized in the past, and our board has been reluctant to make any changes to our cost of living adjustment without also at the same time addressing the formula for the post-89 hires. We appreciate the work that the Commission has done over the last few years to take a look at that issue. Education Minnesota has been sending the message continuously that we need to take a look at the post-89 hires. But our board has acknowledged that we need to make this change now because of the times that we're in. So the COLA that we're proposing is to completely eliminate what we have today and instead have a COLA that is when the fund is 80% funded or less on a market value basis, our cost of living adjustment to the retirees will be zero. When our cost of living adjustment is between 80 and 90% on a market value basis, our cost of living adjustment will be 1%. When we're 90% funded on a market value basis, then our COLA goes to a 2%. And the final step, those three steps are sort of a transition period. And then when we finally achieve a 90% funded ratio on an actuarial basis, we transition permanently to a CPI match up to 5%. So there will never be any excess earnings component after this proposal passes. We acknowledge that criticism. We acknowledge the funding situation that we're in. So there's the transition period and then the CPI match up to 5%. Another component of that last piece is if we ever fall again below 80%, even after we have the CPI match up to 5, if we fall below 80%, then the COLA would be zero again because the 80% threshold is sort of where we want to stay above. It's extraordinary to me. I think Senator Pappas mentioned last week how far the funds have fallen in such a short period of time. We are not accustomed to being in this position. We have historically, traditionally been a 90% funded plan. Not too long ago, 2001, on a market value basis, we were 120% funded. This is very difficult work for the commission. It's very difficult work for the board of trustees at the fund, and it's very difficult for the active teachers and the retirees to get behind this proposal. That's the change to the COLA. That's the impact on the retirees. We understand there's going to be a zero increase to our retirees for several years. And that's the difference between our proposal and the TRA proposal. But I want to continue with the rest of our proposal to explain why we think that's the appropriate thing to do in our plan. Second component, number two on page one, is a change to the contribution rate increases. We want to take the employee contribution rate from 5.5% today to 6% July 1, 2011, 6.5% July 1, 2012. Similar half percent increases on the employer side on those same dates. We had additional contribution rate increases that were triggered at certain funding ratios. And again, our board believes that after the priority that we have today of restoring the fund, our main priority that we've had for several years comes back to be number one priority, doing something for the post-89 hires. And I personally like, and the board fashioned another set of contribution rate increases tied to funding ratios so that when we become 90% funded, another percent rolls in and a benefit improvement is afforded. Those are coming out with the amendment that we're passing today. We acknowledge that we cannot entertain that idea today, but the board is still very concerned about the post-89 hires in the grand scheme of things. So the cross-out language in Section 2 and in Section 3, those contribution rate roll-ins, when we're 90 and 95% funded, are removed, and the benefit improvements are also removed. Section 4 in the bottom part of that page, those are some of the smaller things that have very little impact, but it's consistent with, for the most part, what some of the other funds are doing. We're all doing something a little bit different in these areas, but changing of vesting from 3 to 5 years, interest on refunds from 6 to 4, deferred augmentation to 2%, and interest on reemployed retiree accounts to 0. That is what you'll be left with after the amendment that was passed.
Okay. Mr. Burke, did you have anything further to add? Or going over?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a few comments. This pension fund is in a very difficult position. Right now, according to the July 1 2009 actuarial work, which was the most recent available, this pension fund is only 49% funded on a market value basis. And it would appear that that is not sufficient assets to fully fund the existing liabilities of the existing retirees. When a pension fund is in that situation and has the kind of post-retirement adjustment mechanism that's in current law for this fund, where it's paying an automatic increase and then giving away any increase above 8.5%, the pension fund is in a situation where it would be impossible to grow out of that poor funding situation through investment earnings. The problem the fund would have if the existing post-retirement mechanism were to remain in place is that when the fund begins to recover, starts earning five-year average returns above 8.5%, any of that excess, and that excess would be vital to properly funding this plan, instead would flow through to the retirees, and you would actually get more increases in liability than you were gaining in assets. The pension fund would spiral downwards, same way Minneapolis teachers did, because it has the exact same type of post-retirement adjustment that fund did, and is in the same position. So the status quo is very bleak. Maybe you don't need to do something this year, but if not next year, you would have to do something. Now, the key proposal in this package is to do away with that post-retirement adjustment, and it definitely does appear to be needed. But the problem with the new proposal is that that may not be a realistic situation for the retirees and for the active members of the fund. Again, this pension fund is 49% funded based on market value. Under this proposal, it would pay out no increase at all until the pension fund reaches 80% funding based on market value. Now, if you were to keep the same liability number and figure out how much the assets would have to increase in order to get to 80% to the point where we could pay out a 1% increase to retirees, it would take a 60% increase in the assets. Now, doing away with the post-retirement adjustment will lessen liability, so that will help somewhat. But there's no increase, nothing in this proposal to ask for more state aid. So there's just a little bit more money coming in through the employee and employer contribution rates. And you have to ask the question, well, how long is it going to take to get to 80% funded? It may take many, many years. And over that period, the retirees would have no increase whatsoever. It may not be expected in the remaining lifetime of the average retiree. So it's very draconian. And so I wonder if this is really a viable solution or whether this pension fund really shouldn't be looking into consolidating the TRA as the more viable option here.
Well, and you don't want to get into the death spiral that we saw with the Minneapolis Teachers Fund where it got too late to do anything except roll it into TRA, and even then it was basically a liability to, you know, to have to look at TRA. We made some adjustments. We did what we could, but it went on way too long. But, this is the proposal we have before us, and I don't know how much more can be improved. Mr. Stoffler, any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, if you look on page 2, the actuarial work behind the proposal indicates, column 1 of page 2 is where we are, and this is using the actuarial value of assets.
It's page 2 of this
handout.
The handout. Column A is the actuarial work that was done at June 30 of 09. That's where the fund position was at that point in time. The 49% ratio that Mr. Burek is using was the market value at that particular date and time. And just a side note on that percentage, our calendar year 2009 return was 20%. Rough estimate, I would imagine we're closer to 60 to 65% funded on a market value basis today, just for your information. Column B is the actuarial impact of going to a 0% cost of living adjustment. If you look at line 12, column B, the effect of a 0% cost of living adjustment on the plan is a 6.85% savings as a percentage of payroll, combined with a 2% additional contributions coming in on line 5, the total impact of this proposal, if we were to have a 0% COLA, is 8.85% and leaves us with a sufficiency of 2.95%. We're not suggesting we permanently go to a 0% COLA. Column C represents what were to happen if we had a 1% COLA. The impact of a 1% COLA in total is 3.68%. That's line 12 again. It's the difference in going to from what we have today to a 1% COLA. It's a 3.68% savings on a percentage of payroll. Again, with the 2% rolling of new contributions, we're talking about a 5.68%, row 14, a 5.68% impact on the fund. We didn't model out what would happen if we had a 2 years at zero or 4 years at zero or 5 years at zero and then going to a 1%. You can do that. It's complicated. It's somewhat of limited use because none of us know what's going to happen with the markets in the next several years, when we'll hit 80%, when we'll hit 90%. This is meant merely to show what would happen at a permanent 0% increase, a permanent 1% increase, and then we use some judgment as to, we all guess, when are we going to hit those points. I don't think we're going to hit 80% funded on market value next year or the following year. It may take 4 or 5 years. But the way our board looks at this proposal, we're asking retirees to give something up. We're asking active members to give something up. Retirees will give up a COLA. It could be several years. I can't tell you how many years. I know it'll be, I think it's pretty safe to say it's going to be 3 years. Maybe it'll be 4 years. It could be longer. Active employees are going to pay another 1% into the fund permanently. There's no trigger to take that off. They're going to pay 1% in for the rest of their career. 6.5% rate, which is much higher than that national average. We're willing to do that. The DFT, the Duluth Federation of Teachers, supports this proposal. The active employees are ready to pay 1% more into the fund. The retirees, as a group, have not spoken about this proposal. They really have no organized group per se, but, and I can't speak for them, but knowing the Duluth teachers as I do, I think they are concerned about their own pension. They're also concerned about their pension fund. And again, I can't speak for them, but just in my 18 years of experience as a group, I think I could say they would support the proposal.
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think I have three questions. First of all, do you have a number of years that you would project as to how long it would take you to get to 80% funded? First of all, answer yes or no that you do or don't. Secondly, then give me that number if it's yes. And then launch off into a monologue.
Chairman, Senator Smith, the first answer is no. Skip number two. Number three, I basically gave the monologue already, so I'll just repeat it again. I have no prediction. It depends what the markets will do. I can't predict that. We had a 20% year in 2009. We're very happy to hear that. Many of our managers had a wonderful February that just ended. That's the best I can do, Senator, and I'm sorry, I can't make the prediction.
Mr. Chairman, a couple more questions, and it is Representative Smith.
Sorry.
That's all right, so thank you. What is the average monthly retirement benefit for teachers that you represent?
The average monthly benefits, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, the average monthly payment is in the neighborhood of $1,300 to $1,400 per month.
Mr. Chairman,
Smith.
So then the difference between 1% and 2%, what would 1% of that monthly amount be?
Mr. Stavel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, 1% of $1,400 is $14 per month.
Okay. The last question, Mr. Chairman. On your handout, you talk about asking us and the legislature to permanently make a change in the COLA under certain circumstances. Can you define what you mean by the word permanently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, you're referring to the permanent change in the cost of living adjustment?
Yeah.
What I'm referring to there is once we hit 90% on an actuarial value of assets, our cost of living adjustment from that point forward will always be a match of CPI, and whether we use CPIW or CPIU, it's a measure of CPI as published by the Department of Labor. It will be a match of that index up to 5%. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm done with the questions. I guess what you mean by what you're asking is you want us to make a change permanently until some other legislature will change it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, yes.
Okay. That's all.
Any other questions, Mr. Stoffel? Anything further? We've adopted the amendment. Let's see. And Mr. Burke, you've made your comments. Anything further? Representative Murphy, what's your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stoffel, was there one other amendment that we should...
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I guess I had not seen the original or the amendment that you, well, let me What we want to do today is remove the benefit increase and the corresponding contribution rate increases. And I would also ask that we look at the 7A amendment, which is a bylaw authorization. In our case, we do have a set of bylaws that needs to change. We have an old plan benefit that is not in statute. And so if we make this change to our cost of living adjustments in statute, we would really need and want to make this corresponding change to our bylaw plan. So we need that authority. We cannot change that bylaw now without legislative approval. So we need your approval to change our bylaws if it's affecting a benefit.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of 7A.
And Mr. Burke, that's basically what the 7A amendment does.
It simply authorizes the Duluth Teachers Retirement Association to amend its bylaws to be consistent with whatever is enacted.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves the 7A amendment. Discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lynch. I'm sensitive to the fact that Duluth is seeking to remedy the very difficult situation that they're in. I'm extremely uncomfortable at the suggestion with the COLA at zero for what I believe could be a very long period of time. And in terms of our kind of the guidelines and principles that this commission stands by, we are often reminded that there should, in fact, be periodic increases in benefits with regard to cost of living so that ultimately your benefit does not diminish over time. So I just think we should be cautious about and very cognizant of the long, what I think are some very long-term serious implications here. And I wonder how long it would be before this very same group would be back here saying, oh, wait, it really has been a long time, whether that's 2 years or 3 years or 4 years.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Senator Lynch, I appreciate what you're saying. I think today, for this year, the most important thing we can do is recognize that we are in a crisis situation and address the fact that we have to get new money in all the funds as soon as possible. I think that with the breakdown of the retirees and when they retired in the Duluth plan, that the COLAs that have already been received by the majority of the retirees have been very good, considering, and I remind you that we didn't have caps for a long period, very long period of time, when we as commissioners or whoever our four commissioners were should have perhaps talked about putting caps a lot sooner than we did. That's gone now, but I think the most important thing before us today on all the decisions that we're making today is looking at the amount of new contributions so we can get money in so that it can be invested and we can get. I think we will have to look at the COLAs for all the funds again in a 2-year time period or a 3-year time period. I don't know, as Mr. Stoffel said, I don't know what the market is going to bring. But I talked to Howard Vicker in the hallway, and I said that if all this passes today, all he's got to do is go and make money.
He's got the easy.
And he listened. And so, but I think our step today is to put in place the parameters by which we can start, we can change what's been going on for a long time, where we can start putting new money in, and then we can look at the COLAs again in the future. You know, we found out, and my experience, when I appeared with the putting the post funds into with the active funds, in May of that year, I never dreamed that within 3 months the situation would be arise that they had to be put together. That wasn't when I went before the House of Representatives and talked about the issue. I didn't think that time was going to be like that. And so we know now that the situation is that we have to address. And we don't like any of the proposals. They're not what we would fashion out if we didn't have these various crises in front of us. But I do want to tell you that doing more than what Mr. Stoffel presented to us would not be in a good situation for Duluth teachers, the citizens of Duluth at this time. There is so much going on with ISD 709, with their new projects, their consolidations, all the teachers in the system are rebidding on their jobs right now because there's mergers of schools, and all the teachers are up for commitment. I don't think that they are for reconsideration. I don't think at this time that they could take one more straw on their back. And so I think this proposal is the best that Mr. Stoffel can be making to us.
There were a couple of other amendments beyond the bylaws. One, is there anything else in here that needed to be looked at, Mr. Burke? I mean, we don't have to necessarily go all through them, but is there anything in here that's...
Mr. Chairman, two amendments that the commission may want to consider dealing with this post-retirement issue is the 6A amendment or the 8A amendment. The 6A amendment would revise this bill as it now stands to have a post-retirement adjustment that's exactly like what was done for St. Paul last year, a year before, which is the straight inflation match up to 5%. A drawback to it is that it would not provide the cost savings that the proposal does, but it certainly provides some comfort to the retirees.
Is it Mr. Stoffel or Representative Murphy? Is there any thought on that, the 6A amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would address that. The 6A amendment would give us the same COLA that the St. Paul Teachers Fund has, and that is where we want to go. That's our target, but we do not want to move there. We are very reluctant to do that now, and I would ask you not to put that amendment on because, in essence, it could start costing us money soon if you believe that inflation is going to start rising, which I hear a lot of the experts calling for an increase in inflation. With all the economic stimulus at the federal level, with the economy starting to recover, with inflation on the horizon starting to tick up, we will match inflation up to 5%. Therefore, if inflation goes to 2 to 3 to 4, that's what we will begin paying the retirees. As Mr. Bjork noted, that's more in the favor of the retiree side, but the savings that we're proposing here then go away, and it postpones the financial health of the fund. It is where we want to go. We like the St. Paul Teachers COLA. That's the last step of of the proposal. We have the transition from 0 to 1 to 2, and then we go to the 6A, to the 6A amendment. We like it, but we don't want it right now.
Okay.
So I'd ask not to put that amendment on.
Okay. The other amendment, Mr. Burke?
Given Mr. Stoffel's response to the 6A, I suspect he isn't going to like the 8A, but the 8A amendment would leave the proposal basically as it stands before you, but it would change those triggers. Rather than being able to provide a 1% increase when the funding ratio based on market value hits 80%, you'd be able to start doing that when the ratio hits 70%. So it would lower the triggers. That would presumably enable some sort of a benefit, at least, to be paid sooner than under the proposal as it now stands.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Burke.
The other, if I may make a few more comments. An issue is whether you want to do the various benefit reductions that are proposed in this bill. And we discussed the post-retirement adjustment already. What I'm referring to is the revision in interest rates, the revised vesting, and the revised deferred annuity augmentation. The reduction in interest rates is from 6% to 4%. That proposal is consistent with many that you've already heard, so an argument for leaving it in is it would be consistent with the rest of the proposals. But I would mention to you that it makes very little difference in terms of cost savings. If you look at page 3 of my memo, in table 1, the revised interest rates, and again, that would be changed from 6% to 4% for terminated refunds, death refunds, refund in lieu of an annuity. It only saves, according to the actuarial work, 0.006%. The revised vesting, going from 3-year vesting now to 5-year vesting, only saves 0.001%. While there's an argument that, it's consistent, it's really having little or no impact in terms of cost savings. The one that has a larger cost savings is the revision in the deferred annuity augmentation rate, and that's the change from either 3% or 5% down to a flat 2%. And the savings there is 0.3% of payroll. That one is larger. But on page 5 of the amendment, I do, in table 2, I do point out that while there is a non-negligible degree of cost savings by making that change, it does have a very large impact on the people who would be affected by that. What I've done in table 2 is assumed some various retirement ages ages at termination from age 60 down to age 40 there. And I assume that the person goes on deferred status and at age 65 decides to start drawing the benefit. And what I did was I computed how much the increase would be under current law, how much it would be under the 2%, and computed what the reduction would be. And if an individual terminated service at age 60 does not draw to age 65, the reduction compared to what is permitted or stated in law for that individual would actually reduce that person's benefit by 13%. So if they were expecting $1,000 when they started drawing at age 65, they will instead only get $870. If the person terminated at 55, the reduction would be 25% below what is promised under current law. At age 50, it's 29. And if the person terminated at 40, the total reduction compared to current law would be 35%. So it does have a very sizable impact on the individuals involved. And Table 3 indicates the number of deferred annuitants you have in these various plans. So there are a large number of people impacted by this.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First of all, I think we need to have this discussion about the deferred augmentation issue because I think that's the biggest risk we have in this whole bill, and I'd like to – but that applies to all these bills. It seems to me Duluth has had pretty extensive discussions around this legislation, and the people, the stakeholders involved, seem pretty content about it. And so I think what would work really well right now is just to move this bill, have the vote on it, to roll it into the omnibus, and then maybe we can have a larger discussion about the deferred augmentation issue for all the plans, because I do think that's a serious issue. But it seems like Duluth has done a lot of work on this, and it would be a good time to just
Once we're done with the Duluth bill, we're going to go back to the, the major bills. There's another cleanup amendment there, yeah. and do some other things here. So that's next up, coming back to the big package there. So, okay. Anything else further on the Duluth teachers 10038? We've already adopted the author's amendment. I'm sorry, Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, just a procedure question. So would it be your intent then with positive action on this that you would roll the Duluth package into the, along with
St. Paul? Yeah, well, what we did with St. Paul teachers is I see one bill going out having the long-term stability issues in it, and that's PERA, TRA, MSRS, Duluth teachers, St. Paul teachers. That's one bill. We've been amending those items so far we just amended St. Paul teachers into the omnibus pension bill. We've already amended the MRF issue into the omnibus bill. And then we're kind of going to have to see how it goes. Tactically down the road, it might be better to merge everything into one bill. On the other hand, if some of this some of the stability things run into trouble, as I say, I don't want to jeopardize everything we've done and can walk away with nothing passing. I want to pass a lot of the work that we've passed one way or the other this year. So right now it's just, so we're probably going to put some of this on the dual track, so to speak. So is there anything else to be said on the Duluth teachers 10038?
Mr. Chairman.
Sir, Representative Smith.
I was ready to just make a quick comment back when Representative Mary Murphy was responding to Senator Lynch, but I realized we were still on the amendments. And I was glad some time intervened. It's difficult being recognized on the floor of the House to speak right after Representative Mary Murphy because she has a soft but very powerful delivery. And so even if she's wrong, right or wrong, she's still quite believable.
Is there kind of a hush in the chamber?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Senator Lynch is correct. Going to zero based on not going to zero when you reach 80% funding is a pretty large question mark, but I suspect it won't take long. But at a $1,300 a month average payout to retiring benefits, the difference between 2.5% and zero is roughly $30. In addition to that $1,300, the difference between having a fund that's paying or one that's busted is not getting $1,300 a month. So I think Representative Murphy sponsoring a bill that affects basically teachers in her area looking at a zero increase for a while is quite impressive. So I would be voting yes.
Okay, thank you. I've noticed in the past sometimes when I present the data practices bill, it'd be quiet in the Senate chamber, but that's because everybody left, it depends. Representative Kahn.
I just want to point out to Representative Smith that the same thing happened when you presented the pension bill. It's the subject that gets this deathly silence. Respect. And that would be changed if we'd only add the two more members to the pension commission, so we'd have seven people able to talk about it instead of just five.
But then those extra people would stay on the floor because they'd be compelled to listen. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, as long as we're bragging about people leaving the floor when we present bills, I was known for when I was vice chair of the tax committee, I would have the non-controversial tax provision bill, which I actually would explain, provision by provision, and it was a really good time for people to go and have lunch.
Okay, anything further on LCPR 10-038?
I renew my motion. It's amended.
We did not adopt the 5A amendment, okay.
think we did.
Okay, the 5A amendment was, that was the author's amendment.
Yes, yeah, so
it was the 5A.
That was at the start.
That was the author's amendment. We adopted that at the start. Yeah. Yes.
Do we need to take
I don't have record of it.
Are we doing the 1A?
I think we did that right out of the
show. We did. Okay. Fair begin.
There we go. And okay. Okay, we have before us LCPR 10-038 as amended by the 5A amendment and as amended by the 7A amendment. Discussion of that motion. Now, this is to adopt it into the MSRS PERA TRA proposal by Representative Murphy. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion fails. And then Representative Murphy also moves that LCPR 10-038, as amended by the 5A amendment and by the 7A amendment, also be incorporated into the omnibus pension bill. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I was trying to figure out.
Now, we do have a technical amendment on the MSRS PERA TRA St. Paul Duluth bill. And Mr. Martin, will you have a technical amendment there?
Yes, members. There was a slight mix up on my spot here, and I neglected to pass this out. This is requested by MSRS and TRA. It has to do with the minimum waiting period for post-retirement increases, that part of the joint sustainability amendment. The provisions as drafted don't have the right period. This changes the 12-month from July 1 to 18 months. Basically instating a 6-month waiting period.
And this is MSRS again?
Yeah. MSRS and TRA.
Okay.
They've requested this.
And I see TRA and MSRS. This is okay with everybody? Okay. Discussion. Representative Murphy moves the 4A amendment. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, is there anything further on MSRS, PERA, TRA, St. Paul, Duluth?
Yes.
Representative
Tisa. There's a 7A amendment.
7A amendment, okay.
And as this is handed out, this is basically TRA's proposal with two additions. It puts in levy authority to levy for the amount that the school districts are going to have to come in with. And that's the first part of it. And it also addresses a lot of some of what we've been talking about today, which is the post 89 issue. And what it does is increases each employer and employee contribution by an additional 1% above the 2% that's currently in the bill to fund that equity proposal. So the post 89 folks are going to would start to get their fair share. You know, it's one of these situations, again, as we said last year, the longer we wait to do this, the more expensive exponentially it's going to become. And so that's, and you know, we've had extensive discussion on this proposal, obviously, on this pension commission. And I think that we need to take it into consideration as we think about doing this, because the reality is, you know, this is, in as my understand, I obviously wasn't here in 1989, but you know, this—it's always been the understanding that this is going to be fixed and that equity is going to be restored. The active teachers right now, what 75 to 80% of them are paying in contributions, and those contributions are going to go up again, but are going to be getting a significantly reduced pension benefit coming out when they retire, and so there is some generational equity going on. We have said we're going to fix this over and over again, but we never fix it because we're always dealing with some other crisis. And so I think we need to have an honest conversation about it. And the longer we wait, the longer it's going to, the more expensive it's going to be to fix. And maybe the answer that we need to just give to the post 89 people is we're never going to fix this. Because I think if we get out to 2015 or 2016, it's going to be way too expensive to do. Ever. And so that's what the proposal does.
First of all, for the members of the audience, you know, we were not able to apparently print sufficient copies for everybody who wants to see them. Whether the amendment prevails or does not prevail, it will be available on the web later on, so people will have an opportunity to see it. Representative Thiessen, what happens, again, we, within pension funds, we have to basically find ways to pay for themselves in unusual circumstances, like MRF seeking money. What happens if levy authority doesn't happen?
Then it's just like in the bill today. The districts are going to have to find it out of their own money. I mean, that's what's happening in the TRA proposal right now.
Okay. You know, and I don't know. I wasn't here in 89 either, but my understanding was what happened was it was late at night on the floor where basically the Duluth pension bill was basically rewritten and to give a rule of 90 to existing teachers. The pension commission never approved it. But there were some co-conspirators there, and they were legislators and there were teachers that were part of the process, and ultimately they found a way to give them the rule of 90 for themselves and not for the future people. So this equity argument about, you know, well, you know, I mean, the one group never went in thinking they were going to get rule of 90. It was just handed to them as a political favor, I guess it was.
That was Duluth?
It was a Duluth bill that was at the desk, and that turned into a pension bill with the rule of 90 for all teachers.
I assume in the Senate.
Pardon?
I assume in the Senate.
I wasn't here at the time. It was
in the
House. It was the House. It was some little bill that had been sitting at the desk that people had forgotten about all of a sudden. It was pulled up in the middle of the night, and Rule of 90 was added, and some people just said, my, look what the legislature foisted upon us. You know, yeah, right.
Wait, so the Rule of 90 didn't exist before 1989?
Members, the Rule of 90 was passed for PERA in, I think, 1980, and it was an ongoing Rule of 90. It was limited to pre-89 hires by the 89 legislature.
Right.
And the Rule of 90 for pre-89 hires was extended to MSRS, TRA, and the first-class city teachers.
In that 89? Okay.
In that amendment, yeah. Which was to a Duluth teacher's salary bill, not a pension bill.
Okay. But what had happened, but again, no teacher ever went into teaching in Minnesota thinking, expecting, promised anything, the Rule of 90. It was just something the legislature gave to them and shut the door immediately, saying, okay, you know, people who are in the pipeline right now get it, people in the future do not, because they realized it was bad policy and they couldn't afford the future. So it wasn't like, you know, we had a thoughtful benefit package that people had and somehow the legislature, no, it was just something that was thrown out there for a current group, and basically the future generations are going to have to fend for themselves. That's and now we're dealing with that.
Well, and as we are with a lot of things, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Although I think if you do look at how, you know, again, when we talked about this last week, how Minnesota compares to other states, you know, the benefit package that we provide our teachers and their pensions, you know, is not competitive or equal. And so other states certainly have the rule of 90. This is not something, or even more than that. So this is not something that's just pulled out of the air in the middle of the night for this one pension fund. If I could, Mr. Chair, just, you know, would ask if Education Minnesota could have just a few minutes to testify.
That's fine. We've got an amendment before us, and if somebody wants to be heard on the amendment, that would be appropriate time to speak on it. Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the Pension Commission, Jan Allswager, Education, Minnesota. We understand the sentiment here around the table. We understand the fiscal situation in Minnesota. And I testified at length a week ago, so I won't go through my entire testimony. But I will just summarize by saying I know it is portrayed as a shared sacrifice, the TRA provisions. I just remind you that our active members have been paying far more of the benefits that others are receiving. They have been, and I think it would be very interesting to find out on an actuarial basis what percentage of the contributions that they pay are actually going to benefits that they have not ever received and will not receive. I think that I would like to have one of our members speak and maybe summarize some comments after he has spoken.
Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Peter Eckhoff. I'm a third grade teacher in the Robbinsdale School District, currently on leave as their local union president. I currently represent 900 active teachers in Robbinsdale and 300 educational assistants. I've had an opportunity to have conversations over the last several years with the vast majority of my members, of whom over 75% currently are not, are post 89 employees, I should say. And we certainly look to this body on a regular basis as we look at where our own fates are moving in terms of our ability to someday hopefully experience pension benefit. We truly do understand the dilemma that this TRA currently sits at, and are embracing the concept of shared burden with the hope that we're going to share the burden of finding our way out of the challenges that this pension fund is experiencing, that ultimately we will be acknowledged by not having to continue to look for greater contributions for a lesser benefit for the very fact that we started at a later date. We turn to this body to look for the restoration of justice and fairness in how we approach our pensions as we move forward. We believe now is the time to do that. As Representative Thiessen has acknowledged, the longer we kick this can down the road, the bigger the can gets, and it gets to the point where we can't kick it down the road any further. It just breaks toes in the process.
Mr. Eckhoff, you know, I don't think it's been realistic for people to think that, you know, you've got to get Rule of 90 or it's equivalent. You know, as I said, there are teachers that worked very hard back in 89 to get Rule of 90 for themselves without any concern about people who came later. If I had gone into teaching instead of going in the military and being a lawyer and the other things I've done along the way, I've been probably paid less along the way, but I'd be retired right now. I'd be drawing a check right now, pension check right now. And I'd be working another job right now, because that's what a lot of people in the Rule of 90 have done. They retired early enough they could start a second career while drawing their checks. That was never, ever intended for pensions, okay? Now, I understand, you know, there's teachers that have to work until age 66. That's probably too long. We've been working and trying to find a different way. But the longer we have this mantra saying it's a matter of fairness, you gave it to one group, why give it to the other? Yeah, they pulled a fast one back in 89. Your predecessors, my predecessors, the legislators and the teachers who conspired to do this, and we're all paying the price for it. I don't know how to fix it, but the longer we keep saying Rule of 90, Rule of 90, or its equivalent, just isn't realistic. Talking about benefit increases this year, I don't know how I can proceed, you know, with that. You know, I've been getting my emails over the last day, as I'm sure other members are, the same emails, the same form. People can't write their own emails. They have to forward something somebody else wrote for them. Please remove the TRA provisions from SF 2573, House File 2952, and continue working with Education Minnesota on compromise will fairly stabilize the fund and preserve the defined benefits for teachers. Something's got to get done this year, I think. I think that if you want to kick it down the road and say, just carve TRA out, don't do anything, let's just wait a year and see how things work. Maybe we'll get a better deal next year. You could get a worse deal next year. There's a possibility, I think. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But at some point, somebody's going to say, we can't save this one. Let's just close out the fund, and all new teachers are going to go into defined contributions. Think about that. All new teachers go into defined contributions. How much of a favor did we do to the people who are coming after you? What if we close out TRA and say, okay, we'll just wait and see what happens? MRF is nothing compared to what you're going to have in about 20 years if we don't solve it and solve it soon. I don't think we can afford to get hung up on trying to, you know, jockey around some of these issues. I find it distressing that I care more about saving the fund than some of the members of the fund. Members.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Allswiger.
Which is why we have the amendment that we have today, which still puts in the same amount of funding that the TRA proposal is putting in. So we have a total of a 6% increase in contributions. We have a 2% increase for the employees to pay for a pension benefit improvement. They pay 100% of that, and another 1% paid towards the deficiency. Then we do have another 1% on top of the TRA proposal for the employer. So a 3% increase phased in over 6 years. That takes the employers to an 8.5% increase in Minnesota, which is average to the rest of the country. It would put our Minnesota teachers at the very top of all states in terms of what they would pay for their contribution. So the reason this amendment is here before you is to acknowledge that we are willing to be part of the solution. We would like the equity addressed as well. Saying that Education Minnesota is going to agree to have the highest contribution from employees and just take employers to average does not sound too greedy. We are asking that the 4% that the TRA had been proposing would just be shifted a little bit. The employee will take part of it. The employer would take 3%, and we would get to average. I do want to make a little comment about the deferred augmentation. Just know that Education Minnesota does not support that as well if this bill were to go forward. And people who have left the teaching profession and have received their statements of what their benefit would be at a particular age, and they believe that that will be there. It is my understanding with the changes that are being proposed that what they see as a promise would no longer be there. And if they have made some financial decisions based on those numbers, it would be changed significantly. So I appreciate Representative Thiessen's comments about trying to have a more thorough discussion about that. I have been through my points before. And if you have any more questions, I will be more than happy to answer them. But know that Education Minnesota sits here trying to fulfill our two priorities, equity and sustainability. And I think with the proposal we laid out, Minnesota teachers are fully stepping up to the plate.
STRA had a chance to look at this proposal. Hacking or any? Have you had a chance to even look at, see this? So we haven't seen it. So okay.
Mr. Chair, I mean, the reality is that everybody in the room has seen this proposal before because it's exactly the same proposal that we have talked about in past sessions at extensive length. And the other part of it is TRA's proposal. The only difference from either of those things, it actually has levy authority, which would help our local school districts actually pay for this instead of taking it out of the already money that they're short, which I think is the direction to go. And just because the fact the governor doesn't want to do that, I don't know why. I mean, he always tells us what we can't do. We never tell him what he can't do. And it just, we lose the fight over and over again because we're not willing to step up on that. But that's probably a different discussion than today. The bottom line here is that everybody knows that we need to fix these funds, and this proposal is doing that. No one is saying we shouldn't do the things. Well, except I think the deferred augmentation is a huge legal problem that's going to come back to haunt us. But aside from that, I think that we need to, no one is saying we don't need to step up and fix these funds, and in fact, this proposal does just that. But what it also does is say, if we increase contributions additionally, an additional amount, we can also restore this equity. And it's not just about restoring equity. Your points are well taken, that it shouldn't just be about whether we do the rule of 90 or its equivalent to bring equity. What this also does is actually is the right policy for the state of Minnesota, because it brings Minnesota into a place that's competitive with other pension funds across the country, and does it in a way that's not the rule of 90, but actually is a 21st century version of that does the right thing. Gets to 30 years of service and is a better benefit for most teachers, but also creates better incentives for teachers within our system. And so I think that there is a great deal to be said for this proposal. I know that from the prior discussion what the vote on this is likely to be. I'll withdraw the amendment, I guess. Okay. But I do take issue with the fact that, first of all, the suggestion that the teachers in Education Minnesota is standing in the way of moving forward on progress of stabilizing these funds, because this proposal and what they're asking for actually does this. And I also would say that we do need to consider this levy authority so that school districts have some flexibility going forward, because we're not stepping up to the plate as a state to help do what we've always done in the past, which is to provide state aid so that the school districts don't have to take it out of what are already going to be short funds because of what we've done to the schools over the last 8 years, what the state of Minnesota has done to the schools over the last 8 years. I'll stop with that and withdraw the amendment.
The 7A amendment is withdrawn. Anything? Sarah Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I'd like the record to be very clear that the legislature is not at fault. The problem facing our school districts is a direct result of decisions made unilaterally by the executive.
And that's what I was trying to get at, so thank you for saying that. I don't disagree with you.
Is there anything further to come before us on the stability package? If not,
well, can I just ask one other question? I'd like to get staff's staff what they think about legal issues around the deferred augmentation changes.
Well, there was an individual testified last week, and he was claiming that we were violating some contract, and I didn't have much of a voice to respond. I think Mr. Martin started to talk about that as well, but first of all, I don't see any contract, as you're aware. I mean, contract is between two parties. He's talking about himself and his pension fund. The state of Minnesota, the legislature, is the one that set these contribution rates. We were never a party to whatever that. I mean, we told the fund what to do it, but he can't claim that somehow we're a party to some contract. And a contract has to have a benefit on both sides, consideration. What's the consideration? I can see what the benefit is for him for having some interest rates that he can rely upon. What's the benefit to the state? I don't see any. So whatever it is seemed to be rather one-sided. So I didn't see a contract. On the other hand, some legal issues, I was thinking, can he say that somehow he relied to his detriment, that he made decisions early on that these are going to be interest rates I'm going to get, and because of that, the legislature changing it, I think that would be kind of a tough hill to climb, especially when the fact that, again, they can be subject to change at any time by the legislature. So I don't see how he could say that he relied to his detriment, because he put off receiving the pension check that he was entitled to. So I don't know, but if anybody else has any thoughts on it, I don't see what the legal arguments are.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, we don't have to get into it with the staff. That argument flies in the face of Minnesota case law. I mean, they're clearly a promissory estoppel argument that can be made here, and these folks are in a position where, first of all, I'm not sure that they even know what's going on because they're the furthest removed. We heard from Mr. Burek the impact that this is going to have. I mean, not a small impact, you know, 25-30% for some people that left early in their benefits. I just don't want the whole thing thrown out because we, you know, are doing something that doesn't make sense and is not, as you know, the most questionable legally.
Well, if somebody has an issue unlike that, they know where to find the courthouses, and the appellate courts are across the street, so they can make their arguments there. So, okay, anything else? And this is Senate File 2573, House File 2953, which is a stabilization package. We've had the amendments. Everything is in there. Is there any further discussion? I guess a motion would be in order basically to take this package and adopt the language to amend Senate File 2573, House File 2953, which are bills currently in the GovOps Committee. So is there a motion to adopt this package here?
Yes.
Representative Murphy moves to amend Senate File 2573 and 2953 moves to approve them as amended. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. And then Representative Murphy also moves that the contents of 2573, House File 2953, as amended, also be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. Which leads us to the 2010 Omnibus Pension Bill. I believe there's a technical amendment in our package, Mr. Martin, for figuring all the goofs or other things we've picked up since last June. Mr. Martin?
Yes, members, there are two sets of amendments in your packet. I also have two amendments that we've been handing out. There is a 2A amendment. There's a memo with the 2A amendment. These are the more substantive things that we have discovered about the omnibus pension bill and think need to be attended. It's been pointed out to us by both PERA and TRA that something we thought was an oversight was not an oversight. So there is a portion of the 2A amendment that would not be appropriate to do. So if you can turn to the first page of the 2A amendment, lines 1 through 1.7 through 1.14. This relates to interest on contributions that were erroneously deposited in the wrong pension fund, and the interest that is or isn't payable on those. That was not an oversight by the funds, as we incorrectly assumed, and so those changes would not be appropriate, and we would ask you to exclude them from consideration on as part of this amendment. This is point 2 on the cover memo.
Okay, so is there, you have a cover
memo? The balance of this, perhaps the most substantive item would be point 1. We raised as staff a question with Mr. Bergstrom back a couple of meetings about the inclusion of the collective bargaining representative for the state patrol plan in the state patrol plan and what would be the appropriate disability standard for a duty disability of that person. Mr. Bergstrom indicated he wanted to think about it and see whether he needed to tailor some portion of the state patrol plan or remove the membership provision. Mr. Bergstrom has decided the best approach would be to remove the special membership provision for the State Patrol collective bargaining representative because it's making State Patrol law consistent with MSRS general law, but there is no person actually affected by that change. And so until there is a person that would be actually included in patrol plan membership, it's not appropriate. So that's perhaps the most substantive. The other item would be number 8 on that list. This has to do with the service crediting that TRA is proposing. If you remember, it's current TRA service credit is currently now done on hours per day and days per school year.
This would be shifting it to a salary-based method for computing salary credits. TRA is recommending delaying the effective date for that new procedure from 2010 to 2012, and this has been requested by TRA.
Okay.
We have circulated this for a couple of days, members, on the web, and sent copies to the affected pension fund administrators. So we think that this is a non-controversial item with the change to lines 1.7 to 1.14 that we discussed earlier.
Is there anybody who wants to be heard on the two-way technical amendment? Okay. Is there a motion to adopt it less lines 1.7 to 1.14? So Representative Kahn moves to adopt the two-way amendment with the exception that we will be deleting lines 1.7 to 1.14. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. A two-way amendment is adopted. Mr. Martin, the three-way amendment.
The three-way amendment is totally non-substantive as we view it. This is the fairly standard language style and customary usage sorts of changes, making shalls and musts are correctly instances where commas, because of incremental amendments, got left between the subject of a sentence and the verb of a sentence, taking out those commas. So it's that sort of set of changes. If this does cause any problems, we will work with any affected party to make sure that we get it correct if we inadvertently did follow up something. But to our best knowledge, this does not.
Discussion. Is there a motion to adopt? Representative Kahn moves the 3A amendment.
I'll move it, but okay. I just have a question.
Okay.
There's one place on line 3.5 where you strike a shall and insert may. Is that a mistake, or is that
3.5 shall?
This is one of no. It is not an error. This is one of the instances where it's a prohibition. It's a shall not, and it's made a may not.
Okay.
When it's not a person that's involved, which is the custom that we're using with shalls, you command people to do things if you speak in the third party. Something shall not be done. It may not be done is the current custom.
Okay.
If they don't have permission or they're not permitted to, it's the same impact.
Okay.
So it does not change the legal effect.
Stylistic. Okay.
Stylistic.
Okay. Is there a motion to adopt the 3A amendment?
So moved.
Okay. Senator Lynch moves the 3A amendment. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Mr. Martin, anything further?
We have an amendment that's requested by the State Board of Investment. It's the -7A amendment. In the bill, there are provisions that relate to MNSCU and the MNSCU IRAP plans and reviewing the investment operations for the MNSCU plans. This is something that the State Board used to do on a mandatory basis. The change here is to use either the State Board or a third-party contract administrator. It provides that the MNSCU Board can enter into a contract with the State Board of Investment for these services. The lawyer for the State Board thinks that the State Board law ought to be amended to also include that authority to contract for the provision of investment review services. This is requested by Mr. Bicker.
Okay, Mr. Bicker, anything? You're okay with it, I guess. Okay. Mr. Bicker is. State Board, any questions on the 7A amendment? Is there a motion to adopt the 7A amendment?
I move.
Representative Murphy moves the 7A amendment. Discussion of the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. 7A amendment is adopted. Anything further?
The last amendment that we have for you is the 1A amendment. It does three different things. There's a bad citation that we found in TRA law, a citation that still exists to the TRA variable retirement program. So there's a section cleaning out that bad cross reference. We were contacted during the course of the interim by a lawyer representing the Hennepin County Medical Center, which has special authority to create an alternative pension plan. That section of law has a notwithstanding Minnesota statutes, section 356.24, which is a general prohibition on creating public sector employers creating pension programs. If you notice how many exceptions there are to that law, we try and capture those exceptions in 356.24 rather than have them in some other part of Minnesota's statute. So this adds that exception, which is current law but just not reflected in 356.24, to 356.24. So that's the bulk of the bottom of page 1 through the top of page 3. And then in discussions with the revisor of statutes office, there's an interest in renumbering some of our Minnesota statutes to pull all of the retirement chapters into the 353, 351, 355, 6 area of Minnesota statutes. The way that the organization has been since the 1940s is to put the judges' retirement law in with the judges and the practice of law portions of the statutes. TRA used to be back in the education portion. The legislator's plan is following the legislative chapter of Minnesota statutes. This would centralize all of our retirement chapters all in one place, basically. And it's an instruction to the revisor.
Okay. Anybody want to be heard on the 1A amendment? Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Rice. I'm representing the Minneapolis Police and Fire Relief Associations. And on page 4, lines 2, 3, 4, they would all affect primarily Minneapolis Police and Fire funds. This is the first I've heard of this. I know it's a recodification, but I'm not quite sure what the implications would be other than we have a lot of materials printed, sent out to members referring to these statutes, and I'm not sure. I do know there are a lot of other laws that reference these statutes. And it's pretty complicated. It may make some administrative sense on one end, but without having a chance to think about it, I also note that Chapter 69 is involved, which affects not only statutes, and that's not only affecting the relief associations, but it has implications for tax payments. It also affects volunteer fire plans. I think there's a lot of people that would be affected by this recodification in terms of getting a recodification done and making sure there's the necessary references in other statutes. It might be a bigger undertaking than the commission might think.
Well, first of all, how many of your members actually go to the statute books to look up the things that you send out in your materials? Do they actually look up the statutes?
Madam Chair, with the advent of the Internet, and you would be surprised, a lot of people do go and look at these things. And I do know from my experience, just as the attorney for these funds for over 25 years, there's a lot of intricacies to these statutes and, cross-references, state aids, appropriations, different formulas and things like that. So I hadn't heard anything from the revisors about doing this, I'm just not quite sure what it would do.
Well, even if you go on the Internet, if something's been recodified in a different statute, I mean, they usually have a note there saying that Section so-and-so has been recodified as, and you can go to the new section and see the same language. It's something that happens around here that sometimes they decide to put all common areas of the law in one. I'm more familiar with the data practices one. I mean, we used to have everything in one particular location, which was nice if all you cared about was data practices, but if you cared about say, agriculture or education or transportation, you'd never think to go to Chapter 13 and there'd be something in there. So we finally had to move everything out of Chapter 13 and put it in the respective chapters because that's where people are going to look first. And I think there's been a long-term process within the revisor's office. Now, to the extent that you have cross-references and so forth, the revisor's office, I found, has been pretty good about trying to catch most of them and making them work. But, Reverend Tucci?
Well, I just had litigation last year out of a recodification,
yeah,
where the whole litigation was because pieces of the recodification never happened, and so there was confusion, mm-hmm, over what statute. I think this is a bigger,
yeah,
change than I think we need to think about this.
Well, we also got caught up in the definition of motor vehicle was done as a recodification, and it was just moved into a transportation chapter to change the substance of doing it. So it isn't always just renumbering something. There is that, too. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, we are involved in litigation on all of these chapters with the relief associations in the city, particularly 69, 423B and C. And with respect to Representative Teeson's, I think I remember reading that case. I think it was a bondholder's case or something. It was really quite complicated, and sometimes a recodification can take years to do. I would note, at least with these 422A, I believe, is the MRF statute. 423 sequence deals with local police and fire, and 424A and B are local relief associations, and 490, I think, is the judge's chapter. And I guess that... If I had a recommendation for my client, I guess I'd ask the commission to lay this over for interim study.
Well, the 1A amendment up until 3.29 is not a problem for you.
That's correct, yes.
So yeah, it's just after, from 3.30 on,
section
is the
2.
Problem.
Mr. Chair,
section 2.
I'd like to divide the amendment at line 3.29.
That's a matter of right. So, okay, is there a motion to adopt
on
the 1A?
That first part, I'd move.
Representative Tisa moves the 1A amendment up through page 3, line 29. Is there discussion of that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay. Is there a desire to do anything else? Okay. Seeing none, okay. Thank you. Anything else on the omnibus bill? Okay. Members, do you have anything else? Ms. Vanek. Train's ready to leave the station. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, Mary Vanek, PERA Director. Staff did their cleanup. I just read through this late yesterday and found a couple places that maybe we could do just a verbal amendment.
Okay. Well.
Page 135, line 12.
Strike public general and insert general, okay.
The management of the association is vested in the board, not just the management of the general employees plan. It's also police and fire and local government. So public should be reinstated. General should not be placed there. And fund, I think, should be stricken and replaced with association. So it's the management of the Public Employees Retirement Association, which is the umbrella of all the funds we administer. The management is vested in the board.
So you're suggesting on page 135.12, reinstate the stricken public, delete the new language of general, and the word fund, strike the word fund and insert the word association?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That makes sense.
Okay.
I'm moved.
Okay, Representative Teeson moves that amendment. Discussion of the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, it's the similar situation on page 136, line 29.
136, line 29. Okay. Okay, so Representative Teeson moves page 136, line 29, reinstate the stricken public, delete the new language of general and the word fund, strike the word fund and insert the word association. Do we need to do anything on line 136.30, from public to general?
Mr. Chair, yes, it's the same. I apologize.
Okay,
I do
then
have
line 136, line 30, reinstate the stricken public, delete the new word general. On that motion, all those in favor, please.
And on 31.
And on 31.
On 31.
And a strike fund and insert association.
There it is. I'm sorry, there it is, too. And then on line 131, strike the word fund, insert the word association.
Do we do general and public there also?
Yeah, we're doing, for that whole section 13, we're reinstating public in both places, deleting general in both places, changing fund to association in both places.
It continues down with 14, 15...
Mr. Chair, on top of one,
okay.
137.1, it okay. Just says also says.
Yeah, Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
It isn't necessary there, because if you read the rest of the language, it talks about the police and fire fund.
Okay.
Yeah, it is fund specific.
Okay, the rest are fund specific, so they would not be needed to make those changes. Okay. So on the section 13, 136.27, 136.31, make those changes. Reinstate public, delete general, change fund to association in both places. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Anything else on the omnibus pension bill? We've got some issues.
Yeah.
Anything else? There's one other loose end that I'm aware of, and deferring to Representative Murphy. You remember Representative Poppy came forward with her constituent issue, and we spent quite a bit of time on it. This was an issue that kind of morphed into something much bigger than what she even intended to do, but it did. She started from the fact that she was promoted from one position to another, but that also put her from a defined benefit plan into the unclassified plan. Her original goal was simply to buy back the refunds. That was her goal. And if that's all she came in with, I mean, that's been fairly standard in that. And she couldn't do it because she had been moved in the unclassified plan. So that would have been a fairly easy thing. The trouble is, it then added to more things, whether she'd been, you know, the counseling issue, whether she ought to be able to go back and so forth. And it got more complicated. I think that, as I understand from President Poppy, she still wants what she originally came to represent Poppy for, and that's to be able to go back and buy back the contributions, which she can't do now because she's in the defined contribution plan. So I don't know if the funds have any thought on that or so forth. We obviously don't have the language here today, but I've certainly discussed it, and I've discussed it with Representative Murphy. And if Representative Poppy wants to come forward with that kind of proposal, as I say, you know, I just wanted to see if the Pension Commission had any thoughts or concerns about that. Otherwise, you know, would certainly, you know, give her some advice from the Pension Commission as which way to go. But that's where. Mr. Bergstrom, would you come on forward?
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, and the director of the State Retirement System. Representative Poppy's constituent was in the IRAP plan, the Individual Retirement Account Plan.
At the end.
At the end, right. She was a member of MSRS, and we have a lot of service already still there, but she had a piece that she then had taken a refund a long time ago. One of the concerns would be the people in the IRAP plan have never been able to repay refunds. And so I am a little bit concerned about the precedent. I tried to identify how many there are, and I had difficulty because we don't administer the IRAP plan, but Minsky sent me some data. I think there are 50 to somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 people who could then potentially repay refunds with us that never have been able to do that before. So, you know, I actually had discussed a different alternative with Representative Poppy, but I don't know where she's at that.
Okay.
So I do have a little concern about opening it up.
I just wanted to see where we're at. Ms. Vanek, do you have any thoughts on that, too?
Mr. Chair, members, Mary Vanek, para director. She, this constituent took a full refund of her para covered service. Right. And again, I share similar concerns as Mr. Bergstrom. In this case, she'd pay a repayment of about $8,600, and it reinstates then a benefit cost that's actuarially equivalent to about $21,000. So we weren't assuming that benefit. And it will, I don't know how many other people would be similarly situated, but
okay.
The policy.
I wanted to run out there. Any thoughts? Again, we're not taking action on this one. I just wanted to kind of flesh it out because she'd asked us to you know, just keep some options open for in case you wanted to circle back. But I wanted the Pension Commission to have the input before we get the bill moving on through the legislative process. Okay, any questions about on this issue? So, okay, well, thank you. Anything else on the omnibus bill? Representative Sirleach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson had a bill, as I recall.
He had a constituent, the principal of Red Lake.
Yes, and I'm wondering if we have heard any further on that. They were looking for some flexibility.
She talked to me the other day and said that she was going to try to have her constituent. Do we have any language or proposal? Her constituent was going to talk to the fund on it and see if there was a different approach that they could come in with that was more satisfactory to the fund. She's not here today. She knew she couldn't be here today. She said that if she had something, she'd pass it on to some other member. She hasn't given me any further guidance or anything else on this, so I don't have anything here. So, you know, we heard the issue. Mr. Burke, did you?
We do have copies.
Copies of?
Of a delete all amendment that...
That she asked to have prepared?
Yes.
Well, if you got something to distribute, go ahead, distribute it. I'm trying to wrap up the bill now, folks. If you've got anything, this is the time to bring it up. So, thank you. The purchase of service credit for TRA for disability period. This is an individual, remember, who, you know, he went on medical leave and disability, then he came back, and that sequence of events kind of caused some problems in... Yeah, Mr. Thompson, could you welcome the Pension Commission? I don't know if you've seen anything here, but Mr. Thompson, have you had any further discussion with this individual or Senator Olson to figure out, you know, there's a way to resolve Mr. Dunchy's issue?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Luther Thompson representing TRA. Yes, Senator Olson asked us to contact the member to find out what he really wanted to do. This was really his original proposal to buy the year of service credit that he was on disability and the partial year when he was working and on disability when he was short salary. This takes away the objection that we had to making an exception to the 5-year consecutive high five. It also provides for the full actuarial value. Mr. Dungy did ask the school district if they would share in the cost. The school district said they would. I gave Mr. Burek a letter. They will pay up to $13,700. Mr. Dungy would pay the rest, and the total is about $40,000. This would make TRA whole, and if the commission decides that the circumstances at Red Lake on that day warrant it, TRA would support it.
Okay. Mr. Burke?
Mr. Chairman, a few things I'd point out to you. This bill would not make this person any better off than if you did not pass it, and that it is a full actuarial value purchase. To the extent the school district's willing to kick in $13,700, that would subsidize it, but he would be just as well off if the school district simply directly gave him the $13,700 and you had no legislation here. If you do a full actuarial value purchase, as the 2A or 3A amendment here would do, again, it wouldn't make him any better off than something he could construct without the legislation, and you would have the precedent of having permitted an individual to purchase service credit for a period while the person was on disability and receiving a benefit from the fund. So you do have a precedent concern.
Okay, and 2A and 3A apparently are identical, except the 3A amendment has a purpose clause, which I usually have problems with, but, you know, not always, but sometimes. Otherwise, I guess the two
are identical.
The two are otherwise identical. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, Mr. Burke, what do you mean by not better off, financially not better off over a long period of time or a short period of time?
Mr. Chairman, it's a full actuarial value purchase. So the individual makes a payment, and he receives that same value back over his lifetime. So it's like taking so many thousand out of one pocket and putting it back very slowly in the other pocket. So it really doesn't make him any better off. Now, he is better off if the school district picks up part of the tab, $13,700. So he would be better off by that amount because he's subsidized by that amount. But again, you create the same outcome by not doing any legislation and the school district just paying him that amount. And this way you avoid the precedent concerns.
And
okay, Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Thompson, then, would the school district be willing to just give him the $13,900?
I don't know if he can speak for the school district, though, Mr. Thompson.
But I thought he talked to the school district.
Yeah. Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I didn't talk to the school district directly. One of the members on our staff did. They sent us a letter. That may still be what happens. I mean, he may choose to do that. I don't know. I mean, if he doesn't make the payment before he retires, his annuity will be less, and he may get the $13,700 and put it some other place.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my sense was that one sentence that Mr. Burek just gave us repeated to either the person or to Senator Olson. That the very simple, that he's no better off with this legislation put in, which creates a precedent, which we always know gives us troubles, and with the school district just doing what it's committed to do, and in purchasing an annuity. Has that conversation been held with either Senator Olson or the person, Mr. Dunshee?
We don't know. And, of course, the issue that was complicating it was how that sequence of events, the early retirement a little early, going on disability, the medical leave, then coming back and trying to get his high five out of all that. I mean, that was mucking the waters. But if all it is just a buyback, I don't know if we can't force Mr. Dunshee to even do that. But I'm not sure that he's even aware that's what he's asking for. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, is the purpose of the buyback is that people are banking on the fact that they think they'll live longer? Is that what the issue is? And so you'll be collecting benefits over a longer period of time, as opposed to perhaps that won't, or maybe a spouse that might also be collecting.
You buy back because you want to enhance your pension, but you're taking a gamble. I mean, you may buy it back and then die, before you've got your money back. A couple of years ago, we had this issue with a Duluth teacher, a woman who was forced to take maternity leave back in the 60s. She didn't want to do it. They made her do it, and then now she wanted to buy back. But the closer you get to retirement age and you buy it back, it's more expensive because, all those things factor. Now, in this particular case, the child that she had when she had maternity leave grew up to be an actuary. remember that. And the actuary, that child did the numbers and said, "Mom, If you buy it back, it's going to be very expensive, but you're all going to get it all back within about 5 years."
Seven.
It was 7 years. Yeah. And so,
she's very
happy. And so she did that, yeah. it worked out. But, you take a risk when you do that. So.
Yeah. I'll move the amendment.
Which one? We got a 2A.
Without the purpose.
Yeah, okay.
What to do.
Okay, Representative Tisa moves the 2A amendment. Is there a discussion on the 2A? Oh, Representative Nelson.
My question is, would the purpose clause be of assistance to us in the future? And I know I don't normally like purpose clauses either, but when it would come up at this setting a precedent, would it help us in the future? Is that this was a specific case to remind future legislators?
Representative Nelson, I mean, I'm reading through this. I don't see that there's anything in here that the future legislature is going to say, well, that's exactly why he did it. Now I understand it. I mean, it's just, it kind of sets out some information, but there's so much information. You could almost write about 10 pages of this, and to explain it,
I don't know that it really adds, but that's just my view that I.
That's why I'm asking.
Senator Lynch?
Mr. Chair, I'm very appreciative of the discussion on this issue today, particularly in light of Senator Olson's absence. And this was a really difficult, was a really difficult situation, but I think for me, with all the information that's now been put forward, the fact that arguably this individual is no better off with this legislation, and the what I think is a pretty serious precedent that could be set, I'm not going to be able to support the amendment.
You offered it.
No.
Who offered it?
Teason. I moved it.
Oh, yeah. You moved it. Who offered it in the first place? Or did
Senator Lynch brought it up.
Oh, she brought it up. Okay, and then we handed it out. So nobody really offered it. So does somebody want to offer the amendment? Teason offered the amendment. Okay.
Senator Lynch. Mr. Chair, just to be clear, I didn't offer the amendment. I just, in terms of wrapping up this bill,
you mentioned
I
that
this
we
was
had
some
something
out
there. That's correct. Okay. My misspoke. Okay. So Representative Thiessen is moving the 2A amendment. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there anything else on the 2010 Omnibus Pension Bill that needs to come to our attention? If not, is there a motion to adopt the draft LCPR 10-039 as the omnibus pension bill?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy moves LCPR 10-039 as amended be the adopted as the omnibus pension bill. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Anything?
No. What did I just miss? Nothing.
The passing of the whole bill.
The whole bill.
Mr. Chairman, you didn't get three votes on this side because I didn't say aye.
Sir Pappas
Senator
asked
Lynch
for a division.
Didn't say aye. We were talking.
you call for a division.
Let the record reflect aye.
I think you were saying aye when you were talking, weren't you?
I
want to go here. I know. Okay. Anything else that needs to come before the Pension Commission at this time? If not, we'll see you at conference committee. Okay?
All right.
Meeting's adjourned.
Mr. Chair.
Or not.